Now, where are we with RHI? There's some excitement some days, other days it's not so exciting. Yesterday there was that line, "It was not my proudest moment." Simon Hamilton makes most of the front pages this morning. Hamilton admits plotting with aid to leak RHI emails. And indeed, "It was not my proudest moment" is in the front of the Belfast Telegraph. The newsletter, they put the spotlight more on Sinn Féin using super spads to flout ban on killers. The newsletter's Sam McBride is on the line. Sam, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Sam, you always give us an absolute overview in relation to your commentary here on the radio. I'm just wondering, in the newspaper this morning, are you sort of cushioning the blow for Simon Hamilton, or is your editor cushioning the blow by not having him on the front page when he talked yesterday about it not being his proudest moment?
Certainly not. I'm not sure Mr. Hamilton would see it that way. I mean, we've been covering this for 2 years, and probably 80% of the coverage has involved the DUP in very prominent positions in the paper. Certainly the vast bulk of this scandal is either about the DUP or about the civil service. But yesterday it was the first time there was a Sinn Féin witness before the inquiry, and really some of the evidence there was just extraordinary, because while Mr. Hamilton was talking about a very irregular and, I think, questionable situation whereby he was authorising the anonymous leaking of information, not just to the media, but to his own permanent secretary, the most senior civil servant in his department. That's a very odd situation, and it was designed to take the pressure off the DUP. But what the inquiry heard from Sinn Féin yesterday, and what it really extracted from some of the evidence that it has gathered, is that there was a law passed in 2013, and Sinn Féin didn't like that law, and so effectively they just set up structures which meant that they didn't have to abide by that law. And I think that is a pretty remarkable situation in a democratic situation, where you argue against something in the legislature, you lose the argument, it becomes a law, but you just carry on as if it isn't the law.
And this is in relation to the RHI inquiry, as it says in your paper, revealing how Sinn Féin put in place a system of super spads in order to deliberately flout the intent of a law banning killers from being special advisers.
That's right. This goes back several years. You will maybe recall that there was a very significant public debate about the appointment of Mary McArdle, a Sinn Féin special advisor who was convicted of the murder of Mary Travers as she left Mass in South Belfast during the 1980s. That attracted a lot of public commentary, and there was a lot of criticism of that. There was the argument from Anne Travers, the sister of the lady who had been murdered, that this was insensitive, that it was really rubbing her face in things, saying to her, "This is what we can do." That was how she perceived it. Sinn Féin argued very much against any change to the law to ban this happening again. They said that to do so would be an attack on the peace process. They said that it would exclude some of those people who had been involved in moving away from violence and towards politics. But I think most people, when the law was passed in the Assembly to ban people with serious convictions from acting as temporary civil servants, getting paid very large salaries, getting access to confidential government papers, etc., most people had the expectation, I suppose, that that is what happened, and that while Sinn Féin might not have liked it, that was the law. They had lost the argument, and therefore it was something that they really had very little choice over. But what we were told yesterday was that Sinn Féin put in place this structure of really super special advisors, if you like, who were acting over and above their official special advisors, in the shadows to a certain extent, not accountable in the way that, even in the limited way that special advisors were accountable within the civil service system. And really, these people were not just managing Sinn Féin special advisors, but they were managing Sinn Féin ministers. So they actually seem to have had seniority to even the likes of Martin O'Meara, who was the Sinn Féin finance minister. So a really interesting insight into how government operated in Northern Ireland during that 10 years of devolution, and really where power actually lay and perhaps lies within Sinn Féin.
Yeah, one interesting story coming out of it yesterday. And with regards to Simon Hamilton and the fact that these emails were leaked, was he as embarrassed as he sounded yesterday?
Well, it's just a remarkable story, this. I mean, he certainly did sound contrite to a certain extent. And I think, to be fair to Simon Hamilton, he was pretty upfront about this yesterday. He didn't try to deny that this had happened. This wasn't really dragged out of him. He was asked the question, and he immediately volunteered that this is what had happened. That is in contrast to how John Robinson, his special advisor at the time, acted before the inquiry. He wasn't pressed about it in the same way, but he certainly didn't come forward and volunteer that there was this very significant piece of evidence that he was aware of, which would help the inquiry with its work, which he was able to give to them. But really what he was saying to the inquiry was that at the height of this scandal in January 2017, the DUP was under enormous pressure. Stormont was on the verge of implosion. They were really running around like headless chickens to a certain extent, constantly fielding more media queries about more revelations in regard to what had happened with the scheme, what had happened in terms of the DUP's role in the scheme and the scandal. And suddenly they came upon these emails which showed that there had been a degree of that there were questions around how civil servants had acted at the height of the scheme running out of control in 2015. It showed that civil servants were briefing the industry before there was a huge spike in applications. It really raised massive concern, I think, as to the adequacy of the civil service, the actions that those civil servants had taken at that point, and crucially suggested that perhaps the big spike in applications wasn't because DUP special advisors were running around telling their friends to get in and keeping the scheme open for them, but actually civil servants were freely giving this information out. So it was quite a significant development. And what Simon Hamilton told the inquiry was that rather than really go through the normal processes of putting this to his permanent secretary, handing it to him, saying, I want this investigated, maybe we need a disciplinary process, if that's relevant here. What he did was he authorised his special advisor, John Robinson, to send this anonymously in an envelope to his permanent secretary. That then led to the pretty bizarre situation where his permanent secretary, Andrew McCormick, sent a text message to the minister saying, I've just been sent anonymously these emails, which raised significant concern. He was then setting in place a process to investigate what had happened. Unbeknown to him, the minister was actually behind this and was fully aware of what was happening. At the same point, Mr. Robinson, the special advisor, sent these emails in an envelope to myself and to the BBC. We did not know who they had come from. They simply arrived in the office with no identification as to who had sent them. We then ran that as a story to a certain extent for a couple of days. That took the focus off the DUP. It wasn't very successful, and there was so much really going on that very quickly things moved back towards the DUP. But the clear intent of this was to try to shift the blame, I suppose, from the party onto the civil service.
Should we be looking out for anything interesting today?
I think we're likely to have a slightly quieter day today, although it's always difficult to predict these things. But it's Dermot Nolan, who's the chief executive of Ofgem, that's the GB regulator for energy. They ran the scheme on the part of Stormont. Stormont gave them a contract and really handed over a lot of the day-to-day responsibility to this body. And really, the concern from Stormont and the concern from Andrew McCormick, the most senior official in the Department for the Economy at that point, is that really, when it came to allegations of fraud, when it came to allegations of people heating empty sheds, people really openly abusing this scheme, his fear is, and it seems to be a continuing fear, that Ofgem were not really that interested in investigating that, that they did some sort of cursory investigation where they would phone the individual up, they would give them warning that they were going to come out to inspect their premises. That, of course, gave the individual plenty of time to try to cover up anything that might have been improper. And then even when there was prima facie evidence that something dodgy was going on, if the individual gave an explanation for it, it seemed that in almost every case, Ofgem was willing to accept that at face value. So I think he'll be facing some awkward questions around that today, but perhaps a little bit less high profile, but slightly less juicy perhaps from a public perspective.
Okay, Sam, thank you very much indeed. Sam McBride, the political editor of the newsletter. As we often say about RHI, if you made it up, nobody'd believe you.